Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we hear excerpts from an interview with activist and researcher Amy Worthington. We talked with her about the effects of microwave radiation on the human body from cell phone use and the aerosol operations. This was an interview from 2008, nearly 4 years ago. Obviously, more people know about this. However, it's business as usual in the sky. We are all being affected. And we'll also talk about the story of Stacey Lynn, an outspoken opponent of UN Agenda 21 in Colorado. We hope to have her on as a guest, but we'll cover the story briefly. Oh, and a big thank you to those who came out to the event at Theater 80. It's Over Your Head. We had a wonderful time, wonderful presentation. Very, very nice to meet some of the listeners once again. We're going to keep doing events like this and keep connecting to each other. Let's look at some of the stories in other news. Here's one. As many listeners know, the Newtown Massacre is the second deadliest school shooting in U.S. history and one of the deadliest mass shootings around the world. A gunman at Virginia Tech University killed 33, including himself, in 2007. Only Virginia Tech and the mass killings of 77 in Norway last year had greater death tolls across the world in the past 20 years. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the families affected by this deadly shooting. The story came out that the father of Connecticut school shooter Adam Lanza, Peter Lanza, was the tax director for General Electric, a corporation that paid zero taxes on $14.2 billion in profits last year. This is according to the site Fabian for Liberty. Peter Lanza was scheduled to testify in the ongoing global LIBOR scandal. In what could only be described as an amazing coincidence, the father of Colorado Batman movie shooter, James Holmes, Robert Holmes, was also a LIBOR witness in this position with FICO, F-I-C-O. And according to the link at FICO, Robert Holmes was a fraud scientist. Now, the father of the Newtown, Connecticut school shooter, Adam Lanza, is a vice president and tax director at GE Financial. The father of Aurora, Colorado movie theater shooter James Holmes is Robert Holmes, the lead scientist for the credit score company FICO. Both men were to testify before the U.S. Senate in the ongoing LIBOR scandal. LIBOR, as listeners may know, is the London Interbank Offered Rate. And if you've been listening to Rick Wolf, they set the average interest rate at which banks can borrow from each other. Now, 16 international banks have been implicated in this ongoing scandal, accused of rigging contracts worth trillions of dollars. HSBC was recently fined $1.9 billion. And three other low-level traders arrested. There's much more information to dig into. There's two mass shootings connected to the London Interbank Offered Rate. Could these be direct or asymmetrical conclusions or products of massive corruption within these international banks? Many listeners may have also heard this shooting sparked a rise in gun sales. One gun shop owner in Newtown reported that a couple had been in his shop looking for something to help safeguard their family. Sales of weapons have soared in the wake of Friday's shooting, according to anecdotal evidence from stores. And this is something you can just type into any search engine, TriStar page. But the same thing happened in July after the Colorado movie theater massacre. The number of people getting approval to buy guns increased by 43%. And it was important that they pointed out that this is not holiday shopping sales. So at the same time, there's a widespread call for the country's liberal gun control laws to be tightened. It illustrates a complicated and often conflicting relationship with guns in a country where the right to bear arms is enshrined in the Second Amendment of the Constitution. Gunman Adam Lanza used a semi-automatic rifle and two guns in the Sandy Hook shooting. I'm sure more information will be unfolding as the days go on about this particular tragedy. Here's another story. CIA-sponsored trolls monitor internet and interact with users to discredit factual information. Well, as we've been doing the show and talking about the aerosol operations and geoengineering, and filming the material, putting it on the internet, and communicating with the other activists, they've been essentially attacked constantly for years and years by people who think they know what's going on. In fact, Airship Al from New York Skywatch was telling me that a Facebook account, they were some of the people that were saying, no, there's no aerosol operation, there's no such thing as chemtrails. These were people who were in the Royal Air Force. These were people who are pilots, who claim to be meteorologists. And sure, they may be pilots and they may be meteorologists. And when I hear things like that, it tells me a couple things. They're a troll, CIA-sponsored troll, or just a military troll, or they're too smart for their own good. And what I mean is they're addicted to the emotion of feeling right all the time. A know-it-all. Have you ever met those people? A know-it-all. It's an actual addiction to the emotion of being correct, of being right. And it's usually that person's downfall. Well, anyway, here's the story. In July of this year, it became apparent through a flood of mainstream media reports that the National Security Agency was, quote, desperate to hire new hacking talent to protect the nation's critical infrastructure. Yet the NSA is notorious for its surveillance programs on American digital activity. David Petraeus, former director of the CIA, said at a summit for NQTEL that he was speculating on the, quote, Internet of Things, and that, quote, transformational is an overused word, but I do believe it properly applies to these technologies, particularly to their effect on clandestine tradecraft. Petraeus is seeking to better the CIA's ability to create online identities for undercover spies. Currently, each Internet user has a digital footprint that can trace the movements online to the person on the other end of the screen. Petraeus wants to utilize technology that will essentially erase a digital footprint, erasing all traces of anyone at the whim of the CIA. Well, good luck on doing that, because what will give you away, if somebody who knows what they're doing and knows the content, will immediately know that you're a troll. But that's the thing, that's what these people do. These CIA-sponsored trolls will embroil activists online into terrible threads of arguments and debunking. You can go on NewYorkSkywatch.com and just see the, over to the right, the debunking thread. It's been up there for years. In a possible preparation for the ability of the CIA to spy on American citizens with their household items, the NSA's Utah data center is located in the Utah desert in the foothills of the Wasatch Mountain Range, the centerpiece of the Global Information Grid, a military project that collects yottabytes of data. Now listen to this sentence. They are listening to every conversation, reading every post, intercepting every text message under the false flag of terrorism in this country. It's a false flag of terrorism that was used to build and amass this structure of surveillance on the people in this country, not only in this country, but around the world. The article continues, the facility has the technological ability to record and analyze every communication in the world, from emails to phone calls to text messages to chats. Nothing is private anymore. Based on, quote, threat levels, the NSA can use all the technology at their disposal to obtain information on finances, stock transactions, business deals, foreign military, diplomatic secrets, legal documents, personal civilian communications. The article continues. Here's another story. Psychiatry's new rules threaten to turn grieving into a sickness. By Brandon Keem. A controversial change to official psychiatric guidelines for depression has raised fears that grief over the death of loved ones will be classified as clinical depression, turning a basic part of what it means to be human into a recognized sickness. The change, contained in new revisions to DSM-5, a set of standards used to categorize mental illness, eliminates the so-called bereavement exclusion, which exempts grieving people from diagnosis of depression for 2 months, unless their symptoms are self-destructively extreme. Under the new standards, depression can be more easily diagnosed just 2 weeks after a death. quote, virtually everyone who is grieving has milder symptoms of depression. What the bereavement exclusion did is separate the normal responses from the severe ones, such as the feelings of worthlessness or suicidal impulses, said psychiatrist Jerome Wakefield of New York University, who studies bereavement and depression. This goes over a line. If you can pathologize this kind of feeling, any kind of suffering can be a disorder. It's a disagreement over the boundaries of normality, Wakefield said. Quote, what kind of world do you want to have? One where intense negative feelings we don't like are labeled as disorders, or a world where people grieve? The article continues, the thing about grieving, and this is connected to Robert Bly's work, and I think it's mentioned in Iron John in his book. I'd like to have Dr. Paul Dobronsky back on to talk about this. But grieving, for men especially, when they go down deep into the grieving process, that is a baseline foundation for mature masculinity. That's the baseline emotion. And from there, everything else builds upon that. When I saw this article, it made me think of that concept in the men's movement. Here's another story by Zachary Tracer and Kathy Chen. Chinese investors buy 80% of AIG plane unit for $4.2 billion. A Chinese group agreed to buy 80.1% stake in the plane leasing unit of American International Group, Inc., for $4.23 billion, the largest acquisition by that nation's investors in the U.S. The investors in International Lease Finance Corporation include New China Trust Company, China Aviation Industrial Fund, and P3 Investments Limited. New York-based AIG said today in a statement, the buyers have an option to take an additional 9.9% stake, according to the statement. The deals, ILFC at $5.3 billion and Eclipse's China Investment Corporation's $3 billion purchase of a stake in Blackstone Group LP. Here's another story. QE4. Folks, this ain't normal. What you need to know about the Fed's latest move by Chris Martinson. What you need to know about the Fed's latest move? Okay, the Fed's recent decision to boost its monetary stimulus, a.k.a. money printing, quantitative easing, or simply QE, by another $45 billion a month to a combined $85 billion per month demonstrates an almost complete departure from what a normal person might consider sensible. To borrow a phrase from Joel Salatin, folks, this ain't normal. To this I will add, and it will end badly. If you had stopped me on the street a few years ago and asked me what I thought would have happened in the stock, bond, foreign currency, and commodity markets on the day the Feds announced an $85 billion per month thin air money printing program directed at government bonds, I never would have predicted what has actually come to pass. I would have predicted soaring stock prices on the expectation that all this money would have to end up in the stock market eventually. I would have predicted the dollar to fall because who in the right mind would want to hold the currency of a country that is borrowing 46 cents out of every dollar that is spending while its central bank monetizes 100% of that craziness? Further, I would have expected additional strength in the government bond market because $85 billion pretty much covers all of the new expected issuance going forward. Plus, many entities still need to buy U.S. bonds for a variety of fiduciary reasons. With little product for sale and lots of bids by various players, one of which the Fed has a magic printing press and is not just price insensitive, but actually seeking to drive prices higher and yields lower, that's a recipe for rising prices. So what exactly is this new thin air money printing program all about? Well, unlike any prior QE, quantitative easing, announcement, this one was tied to a fuzzy, quirky government statistic, the unemployment rate. Here's another story, The Great Social Security Robbery, by James Petras, who's been a guest on a number of shows on this station. The leaders of both major parties, Congress, the White House, the editorial writers, journalists of all principal newspapers, and most academic economists claim that Social Security and Medicare need to be, quote, reformed, in order to reduce the unsustainable fiscal deficit and avoid the bankruptcy of these social programs. An important aspect of this elite propaganda campaign is the perverse manipulation of the nature of those two programs. They are dubbed, quote, entitlement programs, implying some sort of government handout or individual privilege. In fact, Social Security is a form of social insurance paid through payroll tax deductions throughout the working life of the contributors, which usually approximates half a century. The, quote, entitlement rhetoric claims that the lifetime contributions are insufficient and that several regressive reforms are necessary to save the systems at the expense of the beneficiaries. The so-called Grand Compromise proposed by President Obama and the fiscal reforms proposed by the Congressional Republicans are all aimed at robbing working-class contributors of their pension savings through various specific regressive changes. The article continues. He points out the Grand Compromise as legalized theft. For decades, only a small fraction of Social Security contributions are used to pay recipients. The bulk is transferred into the general treasury to pay for current expenditures, mostly hundreds of billions of dollars in war spending, payments on bonds and T-notes, subsidies to agribusiness, bailouts to Wall Street, speculative investment banks, and other elite economic interests. Over the decades, the treasury robs several trillions in Social Security funds, exchanging them for IOUs, never reimbursed, in order to provide a kind of, quote, social insurance for the military-industrial Wall Street police state power elite. If the accumulated payments to Social Security had remained in a special account instead of being siphoned off to cover the deficits incurred by military spending in overseas wars, Social Security finance would be in a sound condition at least till the end of the 21st century. The Social Security Administration would be able to adjust payments upward to real rates of inflation. The Social Security Administration could begin full payments at age 62 for most and at a lower age for those citizens working in hazardous occupations. The article continues. It's by James Petras. Now let's look a little bit into the story on Stacey Lynn, an outspoken opponent on Agenda 21 in Colorado. Here's a story related to what happened to her. This is by David Hodges. It's titled, Expose Our Corruption and We'll Steal Your Child. Newswithviews.com. Bad things happen when Agenda 21 ICLEI advocates come to town. When fully implemented, ICLEI regulations will severely limit access to electricity and transportation, deny the common citizenry non-invasive access to beautiful wilderness areas, destroy private business, impose unsustainable tax rates, will arbitrarily seize private property for personal gain, and will promote corruption at the highest levels of industry and government. ICLEI has already endorsed and implemented extreme population reduction methods, and now ICLEI advocates have added legalized child theft to their list of heinous crimes against humanity perpetrated against those who would dare oppose their fascist policies. Stacey Lynn of Larimer County, Fort Collins, Colorado, has been desperately alerting her community to the ICLEI form of totalitarianism, which has been systematically invading her community for the past 17 years. 4 years ago, Stacey Lynn began making presentations regarding the dangers of ICLEI. That's 4 years ago she was doing this, way ahead of everyone else. Lynn opposed the greening of downtown Fort Collins, in which only, quote, eco-friendly cars would be permitted to park in downtown parking spaces. Local businesses estimated that each parking spot was worth $300,000 per year. This reckless ICLEI proposal would have bankrupted several local small business owners. However, Lynn was successful in harnessing community opposition and defeating the proposal. Lynn also fought against her local government's attempt to only employ Waste Management, a financial contributor to ICLEI, which would have bankrupted two locally owned trash businesses. Lynn was somewhat successful in defeating this measure as well. Despite her successes, Lynn was making very powerful enemies, including the Colorado poster child of ICLEI, Pat Stryker, whose business interests were entwined with a group of Agenda 21 engineers, the Brendel Group and Waste Management. This placed Lynn in the crosshairs of Stryker's ICLEI allies, and they came after Lynn with a vengeance. 9 years ago, Stacey Lynn and Jeff Pappenheim parented Jaden. According to Lynn, the biological father chose to not play a role in his son's life, leaving the responsibility for raising the child to his mother. Then, without warning, in January of 2011, the biological father filed a dissolution of marriage action by naming Stacey as his wife and sought sole custody of Jaden. Yet Jaden's two parents were never married. When one considers the following evidence, it is highly probable to conclude that this was the first action of a well-orchestrated plot designed to neutralize Stacey Lynn as an effective Agenda 21 Ickley opponent. The triumvirate, consisting of a former Colorado Governor Bill Ritter, Judge Julie Field, and Pat Stryker's Ickley interests, have been involved in a series of amazing coincidences, which culminated in the neutralization of Stacey Lynn and their main Ickley Agenda 21 opponent. This was accomplished by stealing Lynn's son in one of the biggest miscarriages of justice ever witnessed in a family court. All three parties are inextricably tied to Ickley Agenda 21 interests. The conflicts of interests between Ritter, Field, Stryker interests, and ultimately the 8th District Court of Larimer County are numerous and a matter of public record. Let's hear an excerpt from one of many presentations that Stacey Lynn had given and warnings opposing Ickley and Agenda 21. She's not talking about abstract concepts here. She gets right down to where the money is going. Let's have a listen.
Who belongs to Ickley? Almost 1,200 local governments worldwide, 600 in the United States alone. So they operate mainly behind closed doors. They bribe local governments with access to millions of dollars. They also say that they will allow you to access their toolkits. And when they say toolkits, that's their way of saying, we'll teach you how to take control of private businesses. We will show you how to eliminate individual rights. Ickley's target industries include energy, real estate, development, retail, restaurants, bars, transportations. So anything that produces goods or consumes resources is what Ickley is going after, including human beings. So Fort Collins has what we call an occupancy ordinance. They are limiting and restricting the amount of people who can live in your house. For example, if I wanted to host a missionary family over the summer, I would have to get a permit through the city of Fort Collins. I would have to ask permission to have guests stay in my house for an extended period of time. If I didn't get a permit and was approved for a permit, the fine is $1,000 per day. And the city of Fort Collins is proud to say that they have fined a person $12,000 for violating that occupancy ordinance. So, how is it getting into real estate? We have this nice thing called the Property Assessed Clean Energy Bond for homes and business owners who want to improve the energy efficiency of their buildings. However, Fannie and Freddie have amazingly declined to participate in this program because what comes with this money is an automatic lien that is held by the federal government, which most people don't know. They're taking this energy efficiency money, improving their homes in a way they believe is going to save them money, but the federal government slaps a lien on your house immediately. Transportation for America, Tides, SEIU, Acorn, CWA, they're all working together. They're very powerful. They have billions of dollars that they bribe local governments with. So how does Ickley affect you personally? Loss of individual rights. For example, our occupancy ordinance. We are actually calling people an unauthorized home occupant. Ickley pressures businesses in an amazing way. They have a program called ClimateWise where Ickley employees or city employees will come into your business and suggest ways that you could be more energy efficient. Of course, most of these policies do not actually save energy. They're very expensive for business owners, and it increases the cost to customers. I do want to let you know that there are definite risks to exposing corruption at this level. They will try everything they can to make you be quiet, to stop talking, and to make you disappear. But if you let that stop you from taking action, then they win.
It's just going to get worse.
It's just going to be a disaster. So what other damage does Ickley do to businesses? One of the main things they do is their unfair advantages. So the city of Fort Collins has over 1 million square feet of empty commercial space right now. This is a direct result of the environmental policies that are being forced upon the businesses. When Ickley comes to town, they change the budgeting process. You are required to adopt this triple bottom line budgeting process. Instead of making your decisions based on sound financial policy, you're required to consider society, economy, and the environment equally. The ultimate goal is to make all of your decisions sustainable. However, the definition of sustainable is a bit fuzzy. Nobody can actually say what that means or what the end result is. What happens when you use triple bottom line budgeting is you quickly run out of money. You can't afford the sustainable programs, you can't afford all of the mandates and the policies based on foreign goals, so you're forced to ask for sales tax increase. That's what the city of Fort Collins is doing right now. We are using, this year alone, $600,000 to pay a bicycle coordinator to buy bicycles that the city will own and to teach people how to ride their bicycles. That's for 1 year. We're also spending $2,000 per mile to clear snow from walking trails, paved walking trails. We have 26 paved walking trails, 26 miles of walking trails in Fort Collins. So every time it snows, it's $52,000. We do not have enough money for road repair, fire, or police personnel, but we are planning bike trails. When I started going to council meetings and reviewing agendas, I kept thinking, how in the world are we getting $3 million of unanticipated revenue? Where does this money come from, and how is it just landing on our doorstep? But that money is coming through ICLEI partners and federal block grants for environmental and energy programs. Millions and millions of dollars just falling out of the sky for energy efficient things. So this is an obvious question. Is this entire movement designed to eliminate or encourage individual rights?
Eliminate.
Completely eliminate. If you can't even choose your own trash bag or who is living in your home with you, this is on a path to eliminate our individual rights. So if you're interested in getting involved, start looking at your council agendas. Those are the most fascinating documents. I know it sounds dry and horrible to think about, but reading those council agendas will show you where your money's going and where your city's focus is.
When we say city employees are given authority over elected officials, how do they legally implement that? Couldn't an elected official officially run the department and fire people who challenge his authority?
They can't, because of the way ICLEI has formulated their climate action plans and sustainability plans. Once the city adopts those climate action plans, which sounds wonderful, we all want clean air and clean water to drink, it sounds good. The way they present it is so nice for elected officials that they will adopt these climate action plans. However, once the climate action plans are in your city, that in those documents it says that the city employees have the right to make these decisions. Article 1, Section 10 says that you are not allowed to enter into any foreign treaty, and because ICLEI is a foreign organization with foreign goals in direct opposition to the United States Constitution, any elected official who is supporting ICLEI is violating their oath to honor the Constitution.
That was a presentation given by Stacy Lynn, an opponent of Agenda 21 in ICLEI. She's in Fort Collins, Colorado. Her son was taken from her. The article was pointing out that the whole thing was a setup because Stacy Lynn is an effective opponent that changed policy. By exposing the corruption of the people involved and behind Agenda 21 on the local level in Colorado. Go now to hear an excerpt of a past interview way back in 2008 with Amy Worthington. She's an author, researcher, and activist. She's one of the first to write about the details of the aerosol operations during the late 90s, really before most of us became aware. She had also written two very important articles, well-researched articles, on the physiological hazards of the wireless age, specifically the effects to cellular structure and DNA from cell phone use. Her articles titled Generation X-Ray, Child Victims of Technological Abuse, and Microwaves, the Radiation Poisoning of America, research and document the studies that you don't really hear about in North America. The reality is that cell phone users in the U.S. and Canada have not been told the truth about the dangers of wireless radiation. Now, as most are emotionally addicted to cell phones, it could be more difficult to effectively impart this information. She points out in the interview that the Russian government has warned pregnant mothers not to use cell phones, and that wireless radiation oscillates cells 2.4 billion cycles per second, breaking DNA. All 200 types of cancer begin with DNA being broken. 24 hours of cell phone use equals 1,600 chest x-rays. Wireless radiation opens blood-brain barrier easy access for barium and aluminum. The quiet buildup of wireless technology really equals a surveillance police state around us. And I might add that people around wireless radiation will have trouble sleeping. And if you have trouble sleeping, what then do people do? They'll take a pill or something. The cycle begins. Let's have a listen to this interview with Amy Worthington. As we've discussed earlier, you were one of the first authors to begin writing articles about the aerosol operation, the weather modification, the related ELF and microwave issues. Can you tell us a little bit about how you began and how you started researching and what you were writing about back in the late 90s?
Well, you know, I've been a researcher and a journalist for years, but that was certainly not my subject, what was happening in the sky. I was dumb as dirt, like most of us were back in the 90s, until I saw a television program about what happened to the people of Oakville, Washington. It turns out that in the mid-1990s, the U.S. military began a germ warfare attack against Oakville, Washington, and they were dumping this mucky, gluey stuff full of bacteria and other strange creatures on the people of Oakville, and then they would send investigators into Oakville to see how they were doing in making these people sick. That really made an impression on me. Of course, in 1997, when I heard this story, we hadn't yet really become aware of the chemtrails. But I think at that point I was ready to be aware of anything that was happening in the skies because of the Oakville story.
Oh, really? And what year was that?
Well, they started attacking the people of Oakville in the mid-90s, I would say about 96. There was a program about it on one of the syndicated shows in 1997. And then, of course, the chemtrails began in earnest as far as we were concerned here in the Northwest about 1999, maybe late 1998. And then we began to be very concerned about what we saw then, and of course it's never stopped since.
Where did you get information at that time? Because the internet was sort of just beginning. I mean, there was probably not that much information available at that time. How did you gather information to write and put it into your articles?
Well, thank goodness we had Clifford Carnicon, you know, and Carnicon.com. I think a lot of people started to become acutely and astutely aware in the late 90s, and we just kind of helped one another and learned from one another. And then we began to do more and more research, and we realized that they have been actually, when I say they, our own government, our own military has been playing with germ warfare, using us as test subjects for germ warfare since the 1950s. But the last 20 years, we've just seen a breathtaking and conspicuous attack upon all living things, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it seems to me that in the last 10 years especially, we have seen four major projects that appear to be designed to kill us, to sicken us, to reduce human population as quickly as possible.
Okay, can you maybe run through a couple of those projects and tell us a little bit about it?
Oh, sure. Well, I would say the first and most conspicuous has been the Chemtrail Project, and we know it's for weather modification and for many military applications, and we know they're using toxic metals like barium and aluminum and many nanopolymers and all kinds of fibers and strange, genetically engineered things. And we know that the Chemtrail Project includes the HART Project, which is filling our ionosphere with microwaves, which then bounce back to us, to our Earth, as ELF, or extremely low frequencies. And they're using all of these techniques to steer weather systems and probably to cause earthquakes and so on. The second project seems to be these fake terrorist attacks, like Oklahoma City and 9/11, of course, which are just excuses to unleash this vicious police state that we seem to be growing. And then the Germ Warfare Project, of course, is on everyone's mind. That would be the third project, and that would include these genetically engineered organisms like the mycoplasmas behind chronic fatigue and these machines like Morgellons that they're seeding into the atmosphere. Obviously, all of this is intended to weaken and sicken and disable the general population and maybe even to terrify us.
I think that's true. And why do you think they just don't outright kill people? How come it's a slow process?
I don't know. It's really food for thought. I think if they were too conspicuous about the killing process, I think probably more people would be aware and would awaken. They want to keep the majority of people not informed, let's put it that way. So I think they have to be a little bit careful how they do this, but they're just as effective at doing a slow kill. And that brings me to the fourth pillar of their project, and that would be the wireless revolution. I think probably that is the most pernicious part of their project. And if this is all human engendered, so be it. But I always think in the back of my mind that so much of this is demon-driven.
Well, that's interesting, based on the idea that humans wouldn't do this to each other.
I think they would do this to each other, but I think they would do so only under duress of evil realms, perhaps, where they have sold their souls, or maybe 99% of the people involved in these projects don't even know the whole picture. They just have their own little slot, and they each have their own little part. And they themselves don't see the larger picture. But the wireless revolution is, as I say, it's the most pernicious and covert part of the project, because we can't see, hear, taste, or smell the radiation that's being used to weaken us. They're using this pulsed ELF embedded microwave radiation, and they're selling it to us as convenience, as something fun. Everybody likes the wireless devices. But I think that is the most dangerous part of the program, and that it's threatening all living creatures.
This is really a focus now of your research, and it's pretty powerful. You're saying that it's a pretty insidious maneuver to take something that human beings love to do, and that's talk to each other, design it in a way that they're pressing a radioactive device right up against their head.
That's right. It is a radioactive device. It is the microwave radiation coming from wireless devices that are in the hands of our children, our old people, and that includes your household cordless phones, your cell phones, Bluetooth devices, wireless laptop computers. All of these devices are just as dangerous as X radiation and gamma wave radiation. That has been proven now by reflex studies coming from Europe. And it's not just physically addictive, which, of course, Dr. Henry Lai at University of Washington showed in rat studies that it's extremely physically addictive. And when I say it, I mean the wireless microwave radiation from cell phones can be very addictive, but it's also emotionally addictive, especially for children. There are actually 30 million of our children under 17 that are completely addicted. They're obsessed with cell phones and other wireless devices. And we know that the average child from recent polls is using a wireless device on his head up to 4 hours a day. And when you consider that wireless radiation is the supreme carcinogen, it's a superb neurotoxin. It's a magnificent cardiotoxin. That is, it's very hard on the heart and the circulatory system. It is, bar none, the best mutagen and teratogen that we know of, and that means it causes birth defects. And it has the propensity to cause all kinds of nervous system impairments. We know all of these things because that is the latest science. It's there for anybody to see, and we've documented the science, the most recent science, in two articles, actually, not only Generation X-Ray, Child Victims of Technological Abuse, which was in the Idaho Observer in May, but we've also done a previous article called The Radiation Poisoning of America. That was in the September issue of Observer, Idaho Observer, last year, and that's also something you can Google. So both of those articles are very important if anybody, any sky watcher, and I'm sure the sky watchers are among the most intelligent people we have, so they would appreciate the two articles because they are heavily documented, and you don't have to think it's someone's opinion. This is the latest science. Radiation is lethal.
What has been the feedback from these articles?
People are very concerned and very glad to have the information. Everyone's so busy, no one has time to dig deeply into the science, and most of it's coming from Europe right now. And of course, as you know, we have a tremendous media blackout on the subject of wireless hazards in the United States because there's so much money involved. I mean, even the mainstream media is involved with all this wireless advertising, and they simply can't let people know the truth. Right now we have about 200,000 antenna complexes just for the wireless communications, and it's not the amount of radiation that they put out. That's not the issue, because there is no safe amount of a carcinogen. And we know now from the reflex studies, as I said before, and we've got the reflex pictures in the Generation X-Ray article, you can see that 12 groups of scientists from 7 different countries put together a set of slides in which they show that when you irradiate a human living cell with 1,600 chest X-rays, you have a broken down, destroyed cell with the DNA spilling out of the cell membrane. And when you irradiate a similar cell with 24 hours of mobile phone radiation, you have the same kind of a broken down, destroyed cell that's losing all of its DNA. It's completely damaged. There's a lot of disinformation. You have to be very careful about what you believe, because people that are behind the wireless technology want confusion. They want people to just go back to sleep and say, oh, you know, that was a hoax, and so it must be safe. We're going to get past it because the research is coming in from labs all over the world, from reputable labs, and the latest information is really scary. The latest science is pointing to the probability that the wireless revolution may be intended to drastically reduce the world's population.
That is disturbing, and I want to come right back to that, but I wanted to ask you about some of the symptoms that may manifest with heavy cell phone users. You say that excessive use, that the DNA actually spills out of the cell. What are the symptoms that manifest that could be evidence of this type of damage being done? Do people notice it at all?
Yes, they do notice it. They notice it in many ways. The problem is because they don't know that there's radiation, really. They don't understand there's radiation coming from the cell tower in their backyard, or radiation coming from their phone or their cell phone or their cordless phone. They don't connect their symptoms with the cause. And that's the most pernicious and frightening part of the wireless situation. Now, as far as symptoms, within 2 minutes, the electrical integrity of your brain has completely gone haywire. We know that from many, many studies. And also within 2 minutes, the tiny little blood vessels in your brain can begin to leak. And they leak albumin and other toxins from the blood right into the brain tissue. And the brain tissue was never intended to have any toxin from the blood enter into those little glial and neuron cells. And once that blood-brain barrier is breached, then you begin to get things like headaches, blurred vision, memory loss. All of this, you see, is a common complaint of cell phone users, but they don't understand the mechanism. Wireless radiation oscillates all of our cells, all of our tissues, our blood, everything that's in us oscillates millions to billions of times per second. That's why an oven cooks the food. It oscillates the water molecules and heats the food. All right, well, that's what this wireless radiation is doing to us. And now we understand why the DNA, it breaks so quickly. You know, 24 hours of cell phone radiation being equal to 1,600 chest x-rays, my goodness. And it's because the DNA, the fragile little strands of DNA in each of our cells, with all these precious little things like chromosomes, they can't stand to be vibrated at 2.4 billion cycles per second.
Are there ways to repair that damage after moderate cell phone use and somebody, well, I need to reverse this damage. How do they do it, or is it possible?
Well, I'd say one thing. It's never too late to stop breaking your DNA. That's the first thing you want to do. Become aware and get rid of your wireless devices. I don't care how much you love them, how convenient they are, how much money they make you. It's not worth it because, remember, when you break your DNA, that is the seed of cancer. That's what one thing that scientists agree all over the world, and they have for years, they agree on one thing about cancer. All 200 kinds of human cancer begin with broken DNA, with damage to the DNA. So now, how do we repair? Well, in Generation X-ray, we talk about the Indian study that was done a couple years ago, in which Indian scientists took cell phone users, and it took some scrapings from the inside of their cheek and also their blood, and they discovered that about 40% of cell phone of the DNA of the cells in cell phone users had broken DNA. That was the average. And you know, the body was never intended to repair that much damage. Now, of course, through life with all the other stresses, we do get DNA damage, but we get moderate amounts, small amounts. The people in the Indian study that did not use cell phones had only about 2% damage, you see. Now, the body can deal with that, but 40%, I don't know if the body can repair 40 to 60%. Some scientists have discussed that what we should have done is we should have laid a foundation through cable, which we began in the 1990s. We were doing some fiber optic cables for wireless. It wouldn't solve all the problems, but it certainly would have kept all of these transmitters, these huge transmitters, from going up in everyone's yard and on all these buildings, on hospitals and schools. And oh, it's just horrible. It's a free-for-all out there with the radiation. But even the cable system would not have answered all the questions. And what we should do is put a tremendous amount of studies, or fund studies, into how we could make this technology safer, how we could make the phones safer. We know that the hardware manufacturers, the wireless phone manufacturers, all seem to have patents on devices that they claim in the patents will make the phone safer. That is, cut down the radiation to a great extent. We don't know how good those devices are because they've never been put on the market. To put them on the market would be to admit that the crappy phones that they're handing out, you know, like candy to our little kids, aren't safe, and they can't afford to do that.
And then you add in the mood-altering pharmaceutical drugs, and I was thinking about that, how there's a synergistic effect with cell phone use and that radiation and the mood pharma. And I see you've also addressed this in the article, Generation X-Ray.
We have 6 million American kids now with who are on these horrendous new psychiatric drugs.
Did you say 6 million?
Yes, that was on Frontline.
Tell me what your gut feeling is with the synergistic effects of Zoloft, Paxil, and using a cell phone, the whole mix. What do you think this does to children?
Oh, I'm absolutely convinced that with the amount of brain damage that has been proven by scientists all over the world, the brain damage that happens quickly from these wireless phones, in combination with these experimental drugs. I mean, when we saw the Frontline documentary this January, they admitted over and over that these psychiatric drugs, heavy duty, not just Ritalin, not just Paxil and Zoloft, but I mean brand new heavy duty psychiatric drugs for bipolar disorder and so on, that have never been tested. They don't know what this stuff is doing to a kid's brain. So it just, common sense tells you, you give a kid two sources of stress to the brain, and the kid's already haywire to start with. What have you got? I mean, in 20 years, if we continue on this course, we won't even know the population. We won't have a normal population. It's going to be bedlam. There are no studies being done in the United States on the wireless hazards at all, and that's on purpose, because they simply can't let the American people know what has been happening to us for the last 20 years. But what we do know is, with as much barium and aluminum as they've been spraying on us for the last at least 10 years, the fact that the wireless devices are opening up our blood-brain barrier and making us so vulnerable to the toxins we're breathing in. We know these particles are really tiny. They go right to the blood. And so opening the blood-brain barrier just exacerbates what we're getting from the chemtrails.
Those bastards. You know, it really pisses me off sometimes to see the heavy aerosol spraying and just the helplessness that you feel when you see something like that. And they're 30,000 feet in the air. No one knows where they're coming from. Most people ignore it.
We have to remember that most people, and we've talked about this before, most people are so damaged and they're so ill already from the wireless and the other terrible negative things in our environment, in our modern environment. They're hanging by a thread. They can barely get through their day. They just can't think about the bigger picture.
What percentage of that population that you say most, what do you think that percentage is?
Well, I'd say a good 90% just don't want to know. They just can't deal with it. What do you think?
I suspect that the use of these antidepressants play a pretty major role in denial that's going on.
Very good point. Did you know way back in the 70s, our government produced a document admitting that wireless radiation in the microwave realm excels, I will say, at creating manic depressive illness. That means they know that when they put a microwave transmitter in our neighborhood or on our hospitals or on our campuses, a certain percentage of our people are going to be very, very depressed and very unhappy and very unbalanced. And you know, what makes the microwave wireless radiation rotten, is that it pulses. It pulses, and it has a modulation, and it has patterns, and they repeat over and over. And, you know, electromagnetic warfare experts have told us it's the pulses of the lower frequencies. Now, get this. We've got 2 hertz, 8.3 hertz, 217 hertz, riding in on all of these microwave frequencies that are up in the millions and billions of hertz. So we have all this complex amount of frequency hitting us at once, and if they pulse at so many modulations per second, they can change the heartbeat, they can affect sleep pattern, they can make us paranoid, they can make us have illusions, drowsiness. 6 to 7 pulses per second can give people depression, make them feel suicidal, make them feel unwell. And 8 to 11, that is a prime brainwave frequency, you know. 7.88 in that area. And if they pulse at 8 to 11 pulses per second, we feel very unhappy. We can't relax, but we don't know why.
It's a subtle agitation?
That's right, exactly. And that's the power that this technology has. We don't know what they're hanging on these towers. We have no idea. But what we do know is that this system that New York is putting up for Homeland Security, this is going to be a major tracking and surveillance system.
That was a past interview with author, researcher, and activist Amy Worthington. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. See you next Monday, 10 p.m.